Many of California's female prisoners are mothers, and many of those are survivors of domestic abuse. One is Deborah Piegler. She says her boyfriend started abusing her shortly after they began dating at age 15. She says he was upset with her because she refused to prostitute herself.
I just balled up on the floor in a ball. Never forget, he was just kicking me and kicking me and kicking me. And I was like, okay, I promise, I'll do it, I promise, next time, I promise, just please don't hit me no more, please just stop hitting me.
Piegler speaks from Chowchilla Prison in a documentary based on her story called Crime After Crime. The film was released last year, and it shows how the abuse escalated. After she says her partner threatened to kill her, Piegler was involved in her abuser's murder. Though she wasn't present when he was killed, that involvement landed her in prison for 25 years to life.
And even though I hated him and I was mad at him, I still didn't want him dead. I just wanted him to leave me alone. And that's all I keep saying 20 years later, if only he would have just left me alone.
In 2002, California was the first state to pass what is known as the habeas law. It allows any female prisoner who has suffered domestic violence related to the crime to submit evidence of that abuse and retry her case. Through the San Francisco-based Habeas Project, Piegler was paired up with two pro bono lawyers, Nadia Costa and Joshua Safran, both land use lawyers without much experience trying criminal cases like Piegler's. Their work to free Piegler revealed some startling facts surrounding her conviction and ultimately made it clear that she should have only served 6 years for her crime. Joshua Safran spoke with KALW's Martina Castro about what it was like to work with Deborah Piegler on her case in this interview from our archives.
What struck me about Deborah was not only that she was normal and didn't seem like she belonged in a prison, but that she just had this very kind of friendly, likable, charming affect and was just really good at cheering you up and kind of inspiring you at every moment.
And so what were the circumstances around her case that made it sort of hopeful that you knew, okay, this could happen and we could actually get her out of here?
Well, we were optimistic with her case because there was this brand new law, and it was a brand new law that was designed for a very small target audience, just a couple dozen women in prison. The other thing was that, in an ironic sense, under the law, the worse your abuse was, the better your chances of getting out. So we would always tell Debbie, like, the good news is you were systematically beaten with a bullwhip, or the good news is all these horrible things happened to you, because now, in a sense, it makes your case that much stronger. So we had those two things going for us, and we kind of naively assumed that the system would work and that it would be, you know, maybe a year and we would have her out.
But that's not what happened. Without giving too much away, how did things change from that moment onward?
Well, things changed because we got to the L.A. District Attorney's Office, and we saw that the L.A. District Attorney's Office was systematically opposing the release of every single woman that came forward. So we ended up spending about 2.5 years building Debbie's case.
And the film documents what an uphill battle this was, and not just forming the case, but then also parts of the justice system that were literally working against you and highlighting a lot of corruption that was happening at the DA's office at the time. And then years go by. Actually, there's a great clip of you taking to a whiteboard to really lay out all the places you have to go through to maybe get this woman out of prison. And so I want to play a little clip of that, of Joshua Safran laying out how difficult this could be.
You go to the parole board and you say, hey, I may have done some bad things, but I've been a great prisoner since I've been on the inside. I'm rehabilitated. I'm ready to rejoin society. Parole board typically says, no, you're not. And the DA's office, the prosecutors who put you in the first place, usually chime in and say, no, they're not. Send them back. But even if the parole board finds you suitable, it then goes to the governor. The governor, 9 times out of 10, says, no, send her back to prison. The other route, which is also remote, is to go back.
So that was Joshua Safran laying out how difficult it could be to get Deborah Piegler out of prison, a process that they didn't think was going to take as long as it did. But then it rolled into 24, 25, 26 years for Deborah Piegler, when in fact it is discovered that she may have only needed to serve 6 years in prison. What kind of insight into the justice system did this give you, this process? I kind of, as a viewer, I must say it was really discouraging and disheartening. But you're still a lawyer, right?
I am still a lawyer. You know, I'm ashamed. I'm an officer of the court, and I'm really ashamed about the way that the system works. And it's a complete embarrassment. I mean, I went into this case with, I would call, a healthy skepticism about the strength of the criminal justice system, but a fundamental faith that if you actually lawyered something properly, i.e., you know, if you really had the resources and you really spent the time and you really could just sort of tell everyone the truth, then eventually the system would work. It might be a little rusty. And I walked away from it kind of feeling like our criminal justice system is like the way that Borat's Kazakhstan's system might work, kind of farcical, arbitrary, capricious. You know, happenstance and luck play as much of a role as anything else. No one reads anything. Everything takes forever. It was a really eye-opening experience.
What do you think could be learned from it? Is there any reform that you think could be passed or anything that you think would change this for all those other women?
Yeah, I mean, as the film Crime After Crime points out, I mean, Debbie's story is not unique. And even in, you know, California, there's dozens and dozens of Debbies, and California is the only state in the union that even has this law. You know, so I mean, I think our belief is that we're trying to use the movie and turn it into a movement. We can at least begin to have a dialogue about how to change it, and that's really kind of a cultural change, because there is this perception that, well, you know, domestic violence takes place in a household, therefore it's private and we don't get involved. That's one thing. The other is that when a woman kills, that's sort of more nefarious or more horrible than a man who might kill in a certain circumstance. And the sad thing is about all of these women who have killed or implicated in a killing, they're all very situational. Women tend to kill people that they know very well, who have been abusing them systematically over a period of time. And that, to me, doesn't feel like a murder in the legal sense of the word. That maybe feels like a manslaughter, and there's lots of different mitigations and factors that need to be analyzed. And this is the most damning fact, most of those killings could have been avoided had law enforcement been effectively policing these domestic violence situations. Debbie's case is a perfect example. Her batterer, who was a pimp and a drug dealer who had essentially possessed her since she was 15, attempted to kill her with some friends, and came to her home where she was hiding out, her mother's house, threatened to kill Debbie and everyone inside. He was arrested by the sheriff's department and released the next day when they concluded that this was really a domestic assault with a deadly weapon. And because it was domestic, they didn't deem him a risk to society, which of course he was, and Debbie ended up, you know, going away for life. Part of my view is that we have to start viewing these cases more like class actions. We can't spend 7.5 years getting one innocent woman out of prison. We have to get whole classes of innocent women, or else, you know, there's going to be too many people left behind.